This is Free Thought Radio with co-hosts Dan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews.
Imagine there's no heaven. Sees if you try.
Four, three, two, one, go!
No, that's not the countdown to the end of the world. We're still here, as you can hear. A little more about all that noise in a minute. I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor, and I can say that atheists and agnostics are not in raptures over the rapture, and I'm referring, of course, to the fact that Harold Camping was wrong again.
And again.
Saying the world would end yesterday, October 21st.
And you are Annie Laurie Gaylor, and I'm Dan Barker, and we are hosts of Free Thought Radio. I'm your friendly neighborhood atheist of the airwaves. Welcome to the October 22nd, 2011 broadcast of Free Thought Radio, which is radio for the rest of us. The show broadcasts in Madison, Wisconsin. Also, it's podcasts all throughout the natural universe, but we also broadcast over the air in Atlanta, in Grand Rapids, in Monterey, and in New York City.
Free Thought Radio is the weekly production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation based here in Madison, Wisconsin, and we have over 17,000 members nationwide. We're the nation's largest association of atheists and agnostics, and we are also a state church watchdog, and we invite you today to join us at ffrf.org.
So the obvious news, of course, is that the world did not end last night, but we have a lot of other news to report, and then we're going to play something special. We are playing some excerpts of some dramatic speeches by two of our student activists who received awards at the Freedom From Religion Foundation's 34th National Convention 2 weeks ago in Hartford, Connecticut. A very moving account from 16-year-old Jessica Alquist about what it's been like since suing her Rhode Island school over its promotion of religion, and also what it was like in the heart of the South Carolina Bible Belt for 18-year-old Harrison Hopkins when he protested illegal prayers at his high school's graduation ceremony.
Now, we played a teaser from FFRF's convention at the start of this show, and this is what we call our moment of bedlam.
Welcome to the 34th annual non-prayer breakfast of the Freedom From Religion Foundation. So is the mayor here this morning? The governor? No. Well, welcome to all of you important people who are here. How many times have you gone to some event, a public event or a private event, and you're all there ready to participate, and someone gets up and says a prayer? And you think, what in the world? And how inappropriate is that? But what do? Do you, of course, you keep your eyes open, you look around the room. Oh, there's two of us here. But then, what do? You want to be polite, right? You don't want to complain. You don't want to fight. Well, this morning is your chance to fight back. So instead of the moment of silence, instead of some awkward prayer to somebody's spook in the sky, we're going to consecrate the meal with a moment of bedlam. Are you ready?
Yes.
4, 3, 2, 1, go!
And that was it. You should have seen the wait staff at the hotel wondering, what the heck is going on?
That moment of bedlam is my mother's idea, Anne Gaylor. She's listening to this show today. She always has said, it's so ridiculous to have a moment of silence in the schools when children are so confined, and why don't we have a moment of bedlam? So we teasingly made that part of our national convention.
So it's a way to have a lot of fun. And the Freedom From Religion Foundation has been having a bit more fun with Harry Camping's prediction that, once again, the world was going to end last Friday. Yesterday, we have a campaign going up right now, a billboard campaign called Fool Me Once, in which we are asking the public to use their judgment, not just to reject camping's irresponsible predictions of Judgment Day, but all unsubstantiated religious claims.
FFRF's message is, instead of worrying about the unknown and unprovable and wasting our time and money and energy and speculating over the non-existent, we should be making this world better. And you may recall a number of camping's followers from the family radio quit their jobs. They even spent their savings to help camping's $100 million campaign last spring, in which he placed 2,000 billboards around the United States and warned of a May 21st Judgment Day. And although the family radio lost some of its steam since this prediction flopped in May, the radio website, and I think this is shocking, continued to warn that, oh, he was a little off and the rapture would really be October 21st.
The actual physical rapture, right? So in order to fight back this nonsense, we have placed five different bold messages on 40 billboards throughout Oakland, California, in that Bay Area, the home base of Camping's family radio show, and with two of them for good measure put up over in San Francisco. One billboard against a background of twilight sky and clouds factually states, between 2004 and 2009, family radio raised $80 million. Sometimes it pays to be wrong. And the billboard cites as the source of that CNN's Money.com on May 19th of this year.
And of course, to explain that, in other words, they've made a huge amount of money in scaring the public. Very unethical. Another colorful billboard that we have placed is headlined Fool Me Once, and it features three alarm clocks. It's really cute. The hand dial is inching toward midnight in each of them, and under each of the alarm clocks, there's a date and a statement. Under the first alarm clock, it says September 7th, 1994, wrong. Well, that was Camping's, one of his first rapture predictions. The second alarm clock is dated May 21st, 2011. It says wrong again. And then, of course, October 21st, 2011, still wrong.
Well, if you're listening to this show, of course, you know that happened. If you're not listening to the show, well, maybe somebody got it right once in a while. A third billboard. You know,
I don't follow that logic, Dan.
Yeah, you do, because one of these days, somebody's going to be right. The world actually is going to end for some reason, a comet or whatever. So keep trying. We have a third billboard, which is black, and it has red and yellow flames licking its message. And it says, every day is Judgment Day. Use yours to judge religion.
And a fourth billboard has a backdrop of a very peaceful cloud, a cloudy sky in a field, and it says, in capital letters, still here, and advises, let's make this world better. And this is my favorite of the billboards.
And a fifth billboard carries the Lincoln penny with the Freedom From Religion Foundation message, in reason we trust, instead of where it says, in God we trust.
And I would like to report, I don't think we did report on the radio show, that at the end of May, we wrote a strong letter to the California Attorney General asking for a fraud probe into the Rapture campaign. We provided a lot of evidence. You can read our letter online, asking the Attorney General to investigate how many innocent people suffered financially, emotionally, and physically due to Camping's Armageddon prediction. We asked that Camping's 501c3 nonprofit, Family Stations Incorporated, be investigated for fraud and deceit. And we gave them many of the media reports, the dozens of Camping's followers who liquidated their assets to contribute tens and sometimes hundreds of thousands of dollars to his organization. We noted tragic reports that some of Camping's followers even committed suicide. And I think the worst case was out of California. It was a horrifying case where a California woman slit her children's throats and then her own in order to prevent them from suffering through the tribulation. So, Dan, you grew up in a fundamentalist household.
I used to believe that in the 1960s when I started preaching. I didn't think I was going to live long enough to go to college or have a family because Jesus was coming any minute. Everybody was saying the times are right. The fig tree in the Bible that's prophesied has come to fruit and that there's wars in the nation of Israel. And I thought, one more day to bring souls into the kingdom.
So, our point is that Camping might be treated as being part of the lunatic fringe, but his source for these wacky ideas is the Bible, which talks about Armageddon. It doesn't use the term rapture, but it talks about the end days. The Old Testament contains apocalyptic predictions, and what are some of the major parts of the New Testament?
Well, the New Testament, of course, predicts there's going to be this big overthrow of the world order, sometimes with these big cataclysms. In Matthew 16, example, the world's going to end during the lifetime of Jesus' followers himself, he says. And in Mark, it predicts that the stars of heaven are going to fall and the world orders will be overthrown. In Corinthians 15, it says, the trumpet shall sound and the dead will be raised. And of course, in Revelation, the last book of the New Testament, Jesus says, behold, I come quickly. Well, I don't know about you, but 2,000 years doesn't sound like quickly to me. Every generation of Christians has flattered itself that it's been living in the end times, from Paul to the Millerites in the 1830s to Jehovah's Witnesses in 1914, oops, 1925, oops, 1975, oops, and now the family radio, who's laughing all the way to the bank.
Well, and what bothers me the most is that the Christian children in every generation who have been needlessly terrorized with these irresponsible predictions. And so I would invite you to go to our news link at FFRF.org. It's linked news and news releases, so you can see they're really witty billboards. And if you're in the Northern California area, you can see exactly where they're all posted.
I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor.
Free Thought Radio will be right back. We'll tell you why a Tennessee mayor's remarks about us had to be bleeped out by a TV station.
Hi, I'm Rich from Chicago. I'm a former minister and proud to be now an out-of-the-closet atheist.
As Mark Twain said, faith is believing what you know ain't so. This is Free Thought Radio.
And I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor, and we're co-directors of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, which produces Free Thought Radio.
And before we go on with some more news, a little free thought in the arts. The composer Georges Bizet was born on October 25th. We're celebrating his birthday this week. He was born in 1838 in Paris. The musical prodigy refused a career as a concert pianist in order to compose operas. He wrote Carmen in 1875, based on the free-thinking Prosper Mérimée's book about a Spanish gypsy girl. Criticism and a lukewarm reception closed the play after a brief run, although the composers of Bizet's day praised the opera. The dejected composer, who suffered from ill health, died of a heart attack 3 months later at the age of 36, never knowing that Carmen would become the best-known, best-loved, and most-produced opera in history. As a young man struggling with his religious and philosophical views, Bizet was asked by his academy to write a religious mass. But he wanted to write a comedy, and he replied, I don't want to write a mass before being in a state to do it well, that is, as a Christian. He also said, later in life, religion is a means of exploitation employed by the strong against the weak. Religion is a cloak of ambition, injustice, and vice. Truth breaks free, science is popularized, and religion totters. Soon it will fall in the course of centuries, that is, tomorrow. In good time, we shall only have to deal with reason.
Now there's an optimist for you. Now we want to talk about the cross atop a water tower in Whiteville, Tennessee. We will go out of this segment with a little of Carmen. We don't want to bring that up without playing a little bit. But we previously reported that it looked like the mayor of Whiteville, Tennessee had seen the light, was going to do the right thing, and take down a large lighted cross that is illegally sitting atop the city's water tower. Well, there has been a development this week.
A controversy brewing over a religious symbol on city property takes a sharp turn. Good evening and thanks for joining us. I'm Brad Douglas. Kelly McAllister is on assignment tonight. Mayor James Beller of Whiteville says he's not removing the cross from the city's water tower, and he'll see the Freedom From Religion organization in court. But that's not all the mayor has to say about it. ABC 7 Eyewitness News reporter Daniel Wilkerson has been following the story today. He joins us now live. Daniel?
I'll tell you, Brad, it's an issue that continues to evoke emotion from Whiteville residents. Mayor Beller had some pretty pointed words for the opposing organization.
I will probably remove the cross within the time frame that the attorney has given us from freedom of religion.
Those were the words of WIPO Mayor James Beller on the 5th of this month concerning the cross on the WIPO water tower. But apparently the mayor has had a change of heart. In a phone call with ABC 7 News this morning, when asked about his progress on removing the cross, Mayor Beller said, quote, "Somebody needs to stand up to these atheists, expletive," end quote. The Freedom From Religion's response?
Well, I think his manners are as bad as his legal understanding.
In the October 5th interview, Mayor Beller said, based on the track record of past cases similar to this, he didn't want to risk putting the city at risk of incurring exuberant legal fees. Although he would not divulge who, this morning Mayor Beller said a third party has agreed to pay for all fees incurred by this case. He says not one dime will come from city funds.
If he has worked out some kind of a deal where they will pay attorney's fees, that has to be in writing. That has to be public information.
Crosses in the yards of community members show support of the mayor's decision.
What if they don't believe in God and they feel like this is their city too?
Well, we should have a vote. And whoever wins, that's what happens. If they say yes, we're going to have a cross up there, we're going to have a cross up there. If not, take it down.
Hardeman County resident Tommy Phillips sells wooden crosses to residents for $5 each. Phillips wants the cross on the water tower to stay.
Well, if they don't want to see it, they can stay at home or wherever they want to go.
Now, Gaylor, who represents the Freedom From Religion organization, says the mayor has a different interpretation of the Constitution concerning separation of church and state. For now, all indications say this debate may be settled in a federal court.
That was WBBJ ABC.
And in Jackson.
And the expletive that had to be deleted was when Mayor Beller said about the Freedom From Religion Foundation, somebody has got to fight these atheist SOBs.
Yeah. And, this idea that you would have a vote to decide whether to break the Constitution is a little disconcerting because so many people don't seem to know what the Constitution says. You don't vote on what religion your neighbors have to subscribe to. You don't vote that your town can have a religion. There is no government religion under our First Amendment, and majority does not rule in matters of personal conscience, and luckily so.
And that woman who was quoted saying that they should vote lives in a county that 50 years ago might have voted for segregation in the public schools. And so we know that majority rule does not apply to overrule the Constitution.
And to matters of conscience and personal liberty. And, excuse me, you better carry on, Dan, there.
So we're going to see what happens. The mayor said that they have found some private sources of funding. And it's interesting that how the people down there are complaining about us outsiders. How can these outsiders from Wisconsin come and tell us what to do, even though there is a local complainant? And yet then they go to some outside group who's going to promise to then to pay for this whole thing for them.
Well, and in fact, ethically, an outside group cannot pay our attorney's fees when we win. I mean, whatever the mayor is saying is just dissembling because this can end up costing hundreds of thousands of dollars. It cost the Liberty Council, which was is taking 10 Commandments cases that it's lost, has cost people in Tennessee and Kentucky over $400,000. I can't remember what our attorney's fees were in our Tennessee case.
About $150,000 they had to pay. The school district had to pay that.
When we fought religion in the schools in Ray County, Tennessee, and we're working with the same attorney that we interviewed last week, Alvin Harris. And so it's really reckless to gamble money, taxpayers' money, in this time, in this economy.
And by the way, last week the mayor called us terrorists, for fighting this cross. And Justin Griffith, who we interviewed before, who's in the military, wrote a letter to the mayor saying, hey, I'm over here fighting for freedom against real terrorists. People working for this First Amendment are not the terrorists, it's those who are promoting religion.
And now we are listening to a little bit of Carmen from Bizet. And what's coming up?
Well, in the second half of the show, we're going to hear from two sparkling, intelligent, young freethinkers, 16-year-old Jessica Alquist, about becoming a plaintiff in a lawsuit about prayer in her schools, and then 18-year-old Harrison Hopkins, who both spoke at our convention in Connecticut last week. So stay tuned. I'm Dan Barker.
With Annie Laurie Gaylor.
Beware of dogma. This is Free Thought Radio.
And I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor. Now we're going to hear from a 16-year-old state church activist, Jessica Alquist, whose lawsuit against a prayer painting at her Rhode Island high school has been in the national news since she received a $1,000 Thomas Jefferson Student Activist Award on October 8th at FFRF's National Convention in Hartford, Connecticut.
I am a junior in high school at Cranston West, which is in Rhode Island. And Rhode Island, you don't tend to think, is a very religious place. However, I found out that wasn't exactly true. All of this began for me when I was really a sophomore, but the first time I noticed the prayer was when I was a freshman in high school at the end of the year. And a friend of mine told me that there was a prayer on the wall in the auditorium. I went in to see it, and when I did, I was pretty surprised. I didn't think that my school would have something like that in it. I've been an out-of-the-closet atheist only since all of this started. Prior to that, I didn't want to talk about it. I didn't really identify as an atheist to other people. It was really just something that I told only my family. I was afraid that I would lose a lot of my friends if I did come out. And that actually happened. I did lose some friends. I went to a subcommittee after a parent filed a formal complaint to the ACLU over the summer. I had been doing research on the prayer, on prayers in schools in general, and during that time, over the summer, another parent kind of beat me to it and made a complaint. There were some subcommittee meetings that happened because the school didn't want to just remove it right away. And I went to one in November with my friend who was on the subcommittee. They discussed it for a while, and at the conclusion of the meeting, they said that they wanted to hold another meeting, basically. I had spoken at that meeting, and I identified myself as an atheist. When I did, somebody gasped, and yeah, and somebody else whispered under their breath that I was a little witch. So I didn't feel very welcome there, obviously, from the very beginning. They had another meeting, and at that meeting, there was a lot more people. And they were all wearing signs around their necks that said, "Keep Original Banner." And they were pretty angry. I don't think all of them knew why they were there, though. Some of them seemed really confused. They just said, "Someone's trying to destroy God," and then they all jumped in a van or something. at these meetings, though, there was a lot of irrelevant stuff that people had to say. A lot of people were talking about abortion and how prayers in school somehow lower the teen pregnancy rate, I guess. And this was all coming from people who didn't really know the prayer existed before. And I spoke at that meeting also, and you know, a lot of people I could feel how much people hated me. People were staring at me, they were glaring. Definitely there was gossiping going on in the back. From the very, very beginning of all this, it was very unfriendly. They were angry from the very start. And that was reflected at school, too. In my school, it was on the news a couple of times. And when that happened, weird things started happening. At first, I didn't think anyone would really care. But as it turns out, I would sneeze in class and people would scream, "God bless you," in my face. It was only after they just refused to take it down. They had another meeting, the final meeting, and the full committee voted on keeping the prayer, or not to keep the prayer, and they decided to keep it. And as a result, the ACLU had contacted me, and I told them that I would become the plaintiff in a lawsuit against my city. So we did. In April, we filed a lawsuit against the city of Cranston to take the prayer down. And that, the next day in school, that caused a lot of trouble. In school the next day, I went into homeroom, and people were already talking about it. They were saying that I was mad, stupid, and things like that. So when we all rose to say the pledge, I don't say it because I don't agree with it. I think the under God shouldn't belong there. When we rose to say the pledge, though, people at the appropriate time turned and yelled "under God" at me. And I think that was probably the first time that I realized the magnitude of what was happening. These people I don't think they had ever talked to me before, but they were making judgments about me, and they were calling me names, and it was really hurtful. And for a long time, I was really bothered by it. I went home that day, and I was crying. The whole day, I think, was ruined because of that one thing that happened in homeroom. A friend of mine, we were both removed from school one day because people in the school, there was a rumor going around that someone wanted to beat us up. And that happened several times. Not that we were removed, but that rumors were going around the school saying that people wanted to beat us up. And that can be scary. It can be really scary, especially because there has been some violence in my school recently. Within all of this, I've started becoming much more open about my atheism. In school, it bothers me a lot, but I'm able to kind of put it aside and just get through my day. Sometimes when I get off the bus, people drive past my house screaming things out the window. One event that I remember from last year was during Diversity Week at my school. Yeah. And the Chinese American mayor of my city came in to give a talk about minorities and how even as minorities, he succeeded and he became mayor, despite some discrimination he faced. And one of the students asked him how he felt about the school prayer. And he pointed to it, and he said, "I would like to see that prayer stay exactly where it is." Just about every single person in the auditorium started cheering and clapping, and they all stood up and started, you know, cheering on the mayor for basically being a complete hypocrite. So I was sitting there, and I was trying not to cry. It was really unexpected. Not that I didn't know what his opinion on it was prior to that. He had said on TV once that my family was just looking for money. In case that comes up, we're asking for $25. Yeah. The legal advice was to do that. I didn't want any money from this. I also am not lying when I say that this is offensive. The prayer can be offensive. It's entitled School Prayer. It addresses our Heavenly Father, and it ends with Amen. They've argued that it isn't a prayer. They've argued that it's historical. But one claim that I don't think they can fairly make is that I'm not offended by this, because I am, and other people are too. Even Christians are. I have a Muslim friend who is. They're trying to keep the prayer in the school simply for the reason of pushing God onto people who don't want it pushed on them. And they've succeeded many times. When I was younger, I didn't think that this would be a problem. I didn't see this as necessarily something that needed to be fought all the time. But the more research I did, the more I learned, I found out that religion can be a big problem. And that kind of inspired me to, when I saw this prayer, start fighting it. And when I was faced with the option of suing my city, I decided to say yes. It's been really hard, but I'm going to get through this. And hopefully when I do, the prayer will be removed. The court hearing for this case is going to be on October 13th. And that should be the first of potentially many more hearings and court dates. The city is trying to drag this out as long as they possibly can. I am trying to start an SSA in my high school. And that's been kind of difficult with finding a teacher sponsor, but... Well, people don't want to be associated with me. Teachers often just don't really want to have any other connection with me other than they're my teacher. But we did manage to find a teacher last week, and we're really excited about that.
And that is 16-year-old Jessica Alquist telling her story of state church activism as a high schooler. You can hear, you'll be able to read her speech in Free Thought Today coming up. And
it'll
the whole
be
thing.
Online soon.
So stay tuned. We're also going to talk with Harrison Hopkins, another teenage state church activist.
Hi, my name is Susan from Indianapolis, Indiana, and I'm on Free Thought Radio.
Protect the First Amendment. It protects you. This is Free Thought Radio.
And I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor.
We just heard part of the 16-year-old Jessica Alquist. acceptance speech of her Student Activist Award on October 8th in Hartford, Connecticut at FFRF's National Convention. Now let's listen to part of the speech that Harrison Hopkins gave, another teenager, relating his experience with religion in his South Carolina school. Harrison received the Catherine Ferringer Memorial Student Activist Award of $1,000.
As Katie said, I'm Harrison Hopkins. I'm 18 years old, and now I'm a freshman at Presbyterian College in Clinton, South Carolina. Before I get into my story, I should probably tell you all a little about my religious background. That was easy. I wasn't one of those kids ever forced to go to church, and I really, looking back, can't say that I was ever a believer. And it was about the middle of middle school, maybe seventh grade, that I found out about the term atheist. And then I finally knew what I would be able to call myself. Really, the only time the church was ever suggested to me throughout my, when I was a kid, was whenever I would go visit my grandma. I can distinctly remember pretending to be asleep on Sunday morning so I wouldn't have to go with her. But school was a bit different. Being in South Carolina and North Carolina, church-state violations really aren't much of a surprise. In fifth grade, the Gideons came to my school and passed out those little red New Testaments that they just loved to give to everyone. There was a prayer said at my eighth grade graduation ceremony. And, of course, my senior year of high school, there was the plan to put the whether or not to have prayer up to a vote by the senior class. I learned of that vote during my junior year. And the teacher who mentioned it said that because it was being voted upon by the students, that it's legal. But I thought that didn't sound quite right. So I went home and I started doing some research, and lo and behold, it was illegal. But that was my junior year, so I really didn't think about it anymore until the second semester of my senior year. It was in early April that I found out from a member of student government that we were going to have a senior class meeting in a few weeks, and at that meeting was when we would vote for whether or not to have prayer. So that night, I think it was like 3 in the morning, April 13th, I had filed a complaint with both the ACLU and the Freedom From Religion Foundation. I really did not expect to hear anything back for at least a few weeks, so I was kind of thinking, oh, I might graduate by the time. Actually, the Freedom From Religion Foundation messaged me the very next day and sent a letter to the school principal and superintendent that basically said, hey, what you're doing is illegal. Quit. And then, finally, it's April 19th and the day of the meeting. We seniors were dismissed from class and congregated in the school's auditorium. The meeting went on, and there wasn't a vote. So things seemed great, but then I looked through the papers that they had handed out, and one of them was a page called Tips for Graduation, and it had things like, you need to arrive early, please do not cheer whenever your student's name is called. And then it had a sentence, the ceremony is not over until after the prayer and recessional. So as soon as I got out of school that day, I was on the phone calling Rebecca Markert, who was the staff attorney handling my case. And the FFRF hadn't heard anything back, so they just sent another letter about the handout. The school wrote back stating that after speaking with their legal counsel, they have decided to suspend the tradition of holding a vote on whether or not to have prayer at graduation ceremonies. But they went on to say that according to the South Carolina Student-Led Messages Act, they were unable to prevent speakers from saying whatever they wanted during the opening and closing remarks. The good part, which by good I mean hilarious, is that they mentioned that from their understanding, no court with jurisdiction over South Carolina has held that a student-initiated prayer at a graduation ceremony is unconstitutional. So I guess they forgot about the Supreme Court. But it's South Carolina. We do these kind of things. It took a couple of days, but people finally realized, hey, weren't we supposed to vote on prayer? The student government at the school was, of course, the first to know because the student body president was the one scheduled to deliver the speech, to deliver the prayer. And the news just trickled down from there. And being the only outspoken atheist at my high school, it was pretty much quickly linked back to me. When I was asked about it by multiple people, I just said, yeah, I filed the complaint. It wasn't until one of my friends spotted the news van in front of the school that I knew that somebody had called the news. She asked them if they were interested in interviewing the person who filed the complaint, and yeah, of course they were. What kind of dumb question was that? So she called me, and the next thing I knew, I had to abandon my pizza to get to the school in time to be interviewed. Then that night, the interview aired on the news channel, and things blew up. I was flooded with friend requests on Facebook, and since they added me, I got to see their reactions. And some examples are, I think it's ridiculous that a prayer can't be said at our graduation because someone doesn't feel included. When have you ever been? And then my personal favorite. Now, I'm no fan of senseless violence, but this kid needs to be taken out back and have his ass kicked to beat some sense into him. A person posted on my wall asking why I wasted my money on that, and he called me Devil Boy. And in school, somebody called me the Antichrist. So, later on in the year, when we signed yearbooks, guess what I signed with? After this, tensions in the school were way up. Any time that I walked through the halls at school, it was like all eyes were on me. It wasn't actually like that. It was exactly that. Rumors of people planning to beat me up started circulating, but nothing ever came from those. Thank God. But not everybody was against me. People would come up to me when I was walking through the halls and just tell me, hey, I'm an atheist. Thanks for standing up for us. It wasn't always just atheists, though. Sometimes I even had Christians coming up to me and say that they agreed with what I did. And I started getting messages on Facebook from people who had graduated and said that the prayer had made them uncomfortable and that they were glad to see that somebody had finally taken a stand against it. Soon enough, it was June 2nd, the day of graduation. It started, and the student body president began to speak. I'd like to thank our administration, our teachers, our parents, and there's also one more person I'd like to thank, and that person is God. Will you join me in prayer? Cheers erupted from the crowd both before and after, and pretty much everybody turned to look at me. I wasn't at all surprised. He had stated in an interview that he was still going to pray because that's what you do at big events like that. There was one other mention made by the valedictorian. He started off by stating that we should not have been so divided over the prayer controversy, as we were still classmates and we were still graduating together, until he went on to state that he disagreed completely with those who were against the prayer and that it only served to strengthen his faith. And, of course, he was met with cheers as well. After the graduation ceremony, I had a friend approach me and tell me that, again, he had overheard people planning to beat me up. When I was walking back to my car, I did end up having somebody yell, God loves you. Okay, that's going to change my views. And that pretty much ends my story at Lawrence District 55 High School. In July, I attended the Secular Student Alliance annual conference because over the summer, I was starting to look into what I would need to do to get a SSA affiliate started at Presbyterian College. And that just paid off. As of last Sunday, the Secular Student Alliance at Presbyterian College is an officially recognized group at the school.
And that is Harrison Hopkins talking about his victory, state church victory at his high school in South Carolina. Thank you, Harrison, and thank you, Jessica, for fighting for the First Amendment. And thank you, Dave McCann, our new producer and engineer here in Madison, Wisconsin. Thank Buzz Kemper for announcing. If you want to hear past shows, go to ffrf.org/radio, or you can go there also and sign up for the podcast.
And sign up to join FFRF at ffrf.org or phone 1-800-335-4021. Tune in next week for more blasphemous broadcasting and rational radio.
Thought Radio is a production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, FFRF.org. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews brought to you by Annie Laurie Gaylor and Dan Barker.